Welcome to the steadily advancing adventures of Nick Danger, America's confused detective.
This is Nick Danger reporting. I miss Jim Wright already, I'm sorry to say. For better or for worse, Jim looked the part. And if a man looks like what he is, regardless of what he says he is, the American public has a shot at trusting him. Dick Nixon is a perfect example. He looks just like what he is, kind of a retired crook or mob middle executive who's had second thoughts and at the last possible minute has opened up relations with China and had an actual offer written about him. Ronald Reagan looks just like an actor. Dan Quayle looks just like an idiot. The list is long. But when you come to George Bush, you enter murky identificational waters. You see, I'm a detective, and I have a theory that George Bush, the president, is a spy. That he took his job at the CIA too intently in that corny, patriotic way of his and got himself involved in some double agentry that eventually backfired and landed him in the presidency by some bizarre mistake. The original scenario, see, called for George to assume the traditional disguise of the double agent, that of a rich playboy, fey, sporting, hi-ho kind of a chap at polo, money from oil, some such thing, government service, head of some agency or other, wasn't he? Vice President Wants, nice chap, high voice, married, isn't he? And just underneath, the real George Bush. The Soviet spy. Defeated for president in 88. Overwhelming victory by the Democrats. Bush retires, makes a clean deal with his KGB. Bitter entrapment of KGB American Networks. Company pretends to be fooled. Years pass. Net drawn. Secret revealed. Couple of gunshots. Quick call to barber. Everything's all right. Horseshoe tournament goes on as usual. Book. Random House. Republican Party wrested from control of Western conservatives. One more run at the presidency in 96. Bush. You get the picture. What happened? What could have gone so wrong? I think the American public saw something in that homespun American apple pie face of George Bush. They saw someone who, for better or for worse, looked just like a spy. And that was better for them than a man who looked like Casey Kasem, but wasn't. So they elected him, and now the KGB thinks that they have the president on a string. And I imagine the more Bush tells them that it isn't true and he doesn't want to play anymore and that it was all just a joke, the more they laugh. And the CIA figures they've just got enough on him to blow him up in front of the whole world as a KGB spy, and they just laugh when George says he was working for them. And worst of all, Senator Cohen just laughs when George wants him to co-author a spy novel about his true life adventures.
You've been listening to the Paranoid Theories of Nick Danger. Frankly, this one's too much for me to believe.
You know, just as President Bush is poised to pop over to China for a crucial tete-a-tete with President Jiang Zemin, Chinese authorities, what do they discover? That the 767, the Boeing 767,
yeah,
private
yeah.
plane that we built here, special for order for President Zemin.
$767 million it cost.
Turns out to be bugged from stem to stern with satellite-operated listening devices.
What did you say?
Yeah, what? In the studio with us today is Drew Lucey, China hand for the National Security.
You want a Kleenex
agency.
Or something?
It's just bad weather.
And Drew, you guys caught a bug.
See, yeah,
that's what happened.
I guess so.
And Drew has some remarkable tapes. Welcome to the show, Drew.
It's really an honor, Peter.
Well, you actually have taped conversations covertly intercepted from President Zemin's plane?
Really? Look, there's a spittoon right over there if you want to. Get on with it.
From the 767's maiden voyage with Jiang aboard, you bet we do. His bedroom, his bathroom, the kitchen, they were all bugged.
My kitchen is bugged.
We got a tape from all of these. Well, I'm not talking about insects,
I know.
Pal.
It's a comedy
this
show,
is
mister.
The real
Get on
thing.
With it.
Come on,
Drew.
Come on.
Okay, let's take a listen to those tapes right now, and then you'll tell us what they mean,
I'm
right?
I'm going to tell you.
Okay, here's the first one.
All right, it's the intercept from the bedroom. Let's try to translate here. He said, look at this bed, big and soft. In 1947, on the long march to Yunnan, I slept in the dirt, but hey, baby, look at me, Mao. That's a Chinese pun. It's a little hard to translate. You just sort of got it.
And what's, wait a minute, what's that now? It's a little hard to see.
He's jumping on the bed. Oh!
What was that?
Yeah, that was, he was jumping on the bed and he must have landed on the bug.
Look,
there's more. Yeah, there's
he
more.
Seems very excited. What's he saying?
Oh, now here the president's measuring the TV. He says it's 48 inches. That's the longest one he's ever seen. He's very happy. He says now, he says, Vanna White will be almost as big as life.
Oh, that'll be good for the
Okay, that's the end of the bedroom tape. Let's move on to the bathroom.
All right, now what's he doing now?
Well, he's tested all seven positions on a luxury shower head.
Ah, you did those things.
I like some. He likes them all. And he doesn't like the stingy one here. He's calling that the American water torture. He's got some sense of humor, that guy. Okay, all right, move on to the next tape. Move on. Come on, this is from the galley. President Chang is here talking to his chef.
Yeah, well, what's he saying?
He's talking about cooking food for President George W. when he comes to China. Chef wants to know what to cook. Jack says, it doesn't matter. If George is like his father, he's going to throw it all up on the prime minister, and half an hour later, he'll be hungry again. That's kind of a Chinese sort of pun to it.
Tell me now, how come?
That's all we got.
How come it took the Chinese, Drew? How come it took the Chinese so long to discover the bugs when the report says that they gave off a strange whining sound?
Oh, well, that's real easy. You know, this Jiang guy is a famous whiner. Whines about the economy, whines about Taiwan, the Olympics, the Falun Gong. He's a whiner, whines all the time. Only after he left the plane did they figure out that the whine's not coming from him.
I'll be darned.
Well, what I don't understand is why are the Chinese treating this incident so casually? Yeah, I mean, they don't seem at all.
They're very conciliatory.
You know what they're saying in the news, maybe. No, what's Americans are not the only buggers on the block, you know?
What do you mean?
What?
Well, 80% of all the light bulbs in the White House are produced in China.
Yeah.
You know, they're sitting around right now in Beijing. They're laughing at the tape of W choking on the pretzel. One pretzel away from Dick Cheney. Jeez. I gotta go.
Yeah,
what did he say?
He says he's gotta go, too.
Oh, okay. Well, so many people to bug. And so little time.
Hillary Clinton is stealing my act. I'm watching Rachel Maddow the other day, and this is what she said.
China, if you're listening, why don't you get Trump's tax returns?
Okay. Here's our show from last August. And since we now accept that it's okay to merge your party with a foreign power, I'd like to be the first member of the resistance to say, China, if you're listening... I hope you can find Donald Trump's tax returns. What is this, real time with Crooked Hillary? Hillary, if you wanted material, you should have asked me before the election. All right, we got a great show.
Facebook planned to spy on Android phone users, internal emails reveal. That's a headline in Computer Weekly. You give apps personal sensitive information, and then they tell Facebook. That's from the Wall Street Journal. Those are just two of the headlines this past week. This comes as a new report in Britain calls Facebook digital gangsters. We end today's show looking at how corporations have created a new kind of marketplace out of our private human experiences. This is the focus of an explosive new book that argues big tech platforms like Facebook and Google are elephant poachers, and our personal data is ivory tusks. The book is titled The Age of Surveillance Capitalism: The Fight for a Human Future at the New Frontier of Power. Its author, Shoshana Zuboff. She writes, quote, "At its core, surveillance capitalism is parasitic and self-referential. It revives Karl Marx's old image of capitalism as a vampire that feeds on labor, but with an unexpected turn. Instead of labor, surveillance capitalism feeds on every aspect of every human's experience."
Literature and language were key parts of the control machine for Burroughs. He wrote this unforgettable line, "Language is a virus from outer space," which I always thought was an amazing thing for a writer to say, that language is a disease communicable by mouth. These experiments with language and narrative all tied into Burroughs' mantra that nothing is true, everything is permitted. He thought that by abandoning the traditional narrative structure with the cut-up technique, life would imitate art, and our relationship to time itself would change. Burroughs expanded on his travels, cutting up taped audio. Experiments included that he collected on his travels.
Take out, he thought, no.
Everything true is permitted.
Seems safer than remaining unchanged at 23 and one life sentence.
The officer aimed at coping with what it calls nuclear blackmail and threats of the United States.
They taught him to read and write in the charge room, and then they broke his neck. And what did you do about it? What did you do?
Song and thus made the Chinese communists the fifth nuclear power.
Official said it three by.
I believe in nothing except the reality with which I am confronted, understanding it and dealing with it in terms of my personality. Webster doesn't mind if somebody's a Christian. Webster's
got the money. Now, southwest of Saigon, a battalion of guerrillas pinned down Vietnamese troops with small arms fire. 15 government soldiers.
Begun to live yet.
Security of their motherland and world peace.
Your mind's in a mental cemetery, Webster is saying. That's why you've got peace of mind.
Much of Burroughs' work, including both his extreme choice in subject matter and conceptual writing techniques, aimed at exposing the degree to which our inner lives are controlled. He made connections between vastly different worlds in his writing and used them to expose the authoritarian mindset that he saw everywhere, whether it was ancient Alexandria, another planet, a sadistic doctor's surgery, or the average American office. All were connected by what he called the virus of control. Burroughs' writing on control, machines, and humanity made him the progenitor of now familiar sci-fi worlds filled with replicants and techno-paranoia. Films like Blade Runner, Soylent Green, and The Matrix ensured that Burroughs' visions have entered mainstream consciousness. In Burroughs' world, control is literally a parasite or virus living off the human organism, the symptoms of which included everything from excessive military power to the oppressive banality of daily life.
At this point, I put some questions to control. A word about this control. Some years ago in London, I contacted two computer programmers who purported to represent something that calls itself control, allegedly from the planet Venus. Control will answer any question for $1. You give your question to the programmers who feed it into a computer some way, and out comes the answer. So these are the actual questions that I sent in with my dollars and the answers I got back from control, whoever or whatever control may or may not be. Question. If control's control is absolute, why does control need to control? Answer. Control needs time. Exactly. Control needs time in which to exercise control. Just as death needs time in which to kill. If death killed everyone at birth, or control installed electrodes in their brains at birth, there would be no time left in which to kill or control. Question. Is control controlled by its need to control? Answer. Yes. Question. Why does control need humans, as you call them?
For Burroughs, some of control's most sinister aspects involve the establishment of the social idols it compels us to invent, follow, and then worship. These grovel symbols, as he calls them, are deeply embedded in our thoughts and language. They include religious and political figures, as well as concepts like the ideal family or unquestioning patriotism. Burroughs thought that recognizing these symbols and concepts within ourselves was crucial in order to escape the virus.
Define surveillance capitalism.
Surveillance capitalism departs in many ways from the history of market capitalism, but in a fundamental way, it is continuous with that history. We know that capitalism has evolved by taking things that live outside of the market, bringing them into the market dynamic, transforming them into commodities that can be sold and purchased. So famously, industrial capitalism claims nature for the market. It is reborn as real estate, as land that can be sold and purchased. It claims work for the market, reborn as labor that can be sold and purchased. So surveillance capitalism continues this tradition, but with that dark twist. In our time, surveillance capitalism claims private human experience for the market dynamic as a free source of raw material that is translated into behavioral data. These data are then combined with advanced computational abilities to create predictions of what we will do, predictions of our behavior, predictions of what we will do now, soon, and later. And these predictions are then sold to business customers in a new kind of marketplace that trades exclusively in human futures. This was first invented in the context of online targeted advertising at Google back in 2000-2001 in the teeth of financial emergency during the dot-com bust. But this same economic logic has now traveled not only from Google to Facebook and throughout the tech sector, but now throughout the normal economy into virtually every economic sector.
So comment on these last few headlines just of the last week. I mean, for example, the report in Britain that calls Facebook digital gangsters.
All right, now, everyone, just keep quiet and I'll handle everything.
I get to handle it next.
Sure, please. I don't think we should...
Okay, I'm coming.
Mr. Stone's
obvious dick funeral parlor. You snuff him, we stuff him.
That's very clever. I'm Joe from Chicago, my good man. Let us in.
You're Joe from... How do I know you're Joe from Chicago?
I live here.
Oh. Well, well, who are these other lugs, then?
My mob, Southside, Veronica Lakeshore, and Louis the Loop.
The dishonor is all mine,
sir. Wait a minute, Fops. Why are you speaking with a French accent?
Well,
We're in disguise.
I get it. Well, what's the secret password?
Oh, no, you don't, sir. I shall never be tricked into telling it. It's a secret.
You got it. Good for you. I'd forgotten it, too. Come on in.
And a real nice guy, Joe from Chicago and his mob.
Glad to have you back, Joe.
Disarmed, I'm sure.
Joe, this here is Harold the Hawk Lunget and his gang, Willard.
Shall I wipe him off, boss? Shall I drive him around the block? Let me clean his car, boss.
Curb your rat, Hawk.
Don't mind Willard, see? He's just a psychopathic killer. Drop your dog, see? Slide in, see? Have an oil beer, see?
You too, please.
Mr. Stones,
sit
down. This is a dangerous smoke.
Easy, Mr. Stones. Our disguises won't hold up long here.
What do you mean?
It's a job for the team, man. I'm going to...
Hey, where are you going, shortstop?
I'm going to go case the bathroom.
Join the table, Joe.
Oh, thank you.
So I thought I'd never meet Joe from Chicago, see? You know, we got a friend in common.
Oh, really?
Jim Fang, see?
Oh, Jim C. Fang.
Yeah.
Yes, I knew him.
Yeah.
Well, I may have bumped into him once.
That's rich. Bumped him off, you mean? Hey, honey, you're a swell flapper. What's under the flap?
Watch it there, bug eyes. Keep your peepers off my mole.
Mole? Who's the professor?
I'm a practicing physician, sir.
Well, when you stop practicing, see? I got a couple of slugs in my back garden, see? I want removed, see?
Clip him, boss. I'll shake his hedge. I'll mow him down.
Go squeeze a tomato, Willard. They're playing your song.
Let me squeeze this one,
boss. Just a second, old man.
Just a second, old man.
It's lady's choice, Ratso.
Thanks, Joe. Come on, Louie. Let's rap.
Oh, delighted, Ronnie. I do a colorful Afghani bondage dance. The beggars crawl. Sumatran kick dance.
They make a nice couple, don't they? She sets him up, he knocks her down.
Plant those bozos, Willard, see?
I'll throw him the fish I want.
Well, Joe, What do you know?
What?
What's your swindle, see? Oh. A snatch, a heist, bunko, the rackets?
Oh, no, no, no. Pig nuts. Bogus pig nuts.
Oh, big time.
You betcha.
Me, I'm up to my nose in candy.
Really?
Here's a little 2-pound sampler. You can take home the little woman. Make her littler. Try one.
Ah, nose candy.
Yeah.
Mmm, smells good, too.
Ah, don't horn the ones with the cherries in the middle, Joe. You'll suffocate.
I like the powdered sugar at the bottom of the box best.
Ah, more sugar. I get it. That's rich, see? Ha, ha, ha.
Oh, good stuff. There's a ringing in my ears.
I'll get it. It's Herr Lungitz table. You're talking to the hawk, see? What's so funny about that? Ha, 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 yourself.
You want me to cut him off, boss?
Relax, Willard. Boris, it's for you. Some weird electrician on the wire. Repairs or something, see?
The boss, I know who that is. Thanks, Hal.
Nord wires, no doubt.
Nord who?
Just an ingenue I know.
Joe, you're wired.
You want me to put this plug?
No, take it easy.
Hi, boss. Where do you want Mr... Oh. He wants me to use the criminal's code. Hello, sweetheart. I picked up the bag of pickles and took them to your mother's house. I knocked him out. Asleep in the linen closet. What's so funny? Put the pickles in. Put the pickles in where? No. You mean the linen closet, don't you? Look, turn the organ down a little. I can hardly hear you. Okay, dear, have it your way. I'll put the pickles in the galoshes, but I still think... No, I like your organ, honey, and I love you. Don't cry. Oh, you're laughing. Okay, sweetheart, glad you see it that way. I'm signing off now. O-F. Goodbye. I mean, hello.
Huh?
Excuse me, gents, but I've got
to
go.
To the bathroom.
No, yes.
Yes.
I mean the linen closet.
Yes, well, I have to see a dog about a man, too.
Yeah, Joe, I know what you mean. This oil beer goes through you like a hot car, see?
Yeah.
Speaking of which, what kind of touring car you like to steal when you're doing a... Where's everybody
like
gone?
In the case of the ergot poisoning, just imagine a whole town high on rye.
Oh, that must have been before Prohibition.
Glad you're back, sister. Hey, Professor, your friend just took a powder, see?
Oh, really? What did he say? Did you take notes?
I only take what don't belong to me, see?
You boys, excuse me, I have to powder my knees.
Well, let me escort you to the festivities.
Hey, the party's pooping out on me. What's happening? Hey, Blutwurst, come on over here, see? I need somebody to talk
to. Oh, doctor, you don't need to go with me, really.
Oh, but I do, my dear. This foreign dancing gives me the fearful shuffles.
Oh, I caught them in Buffalo once. Well, here's the little Sheba's room. Bye-bye.
Sheba's, over here. Sheiks. Well, this must be the gents.
Quiet, Mr. Stones, we have to get out of here or we'll get caught in the rain.
It's occupied. My dear, I'm beginning to shuffle, too.
I saw him come in here, and what goes in must come out. Fudge law, lad. Fudge law. By God, I've got it.
What?
A rat hole. Pickles down the rat hole. Ha-ha! It's a rat.
Stones, I say. Is that you?
But I don't have
locked her from the inside.
Stone it. Come on, there, room for two. Now, pull together.
Stones! I say, Frankenstone's gone. It's monstrous.
Well, since just about a year ago now, we're coming up on the one-year anniversary of the Cambridge Analytica revelations. One of the consequences of those revelations is not only that a lot of us all around the world have been put on alert that all is not well in the digital realm. That's one thing. But a second thing is that, at least in the UK, the government has taken this very, very seriously. And there's been a parliamentary committee investigating Facebook. This committee was able to get leaked documents, secret documents from Facebook that had not been reviewed by the public. And just last week, they issued their 108-page report. It's very powerful, very damning, and among other things, they refer to Facebook as behaving like digital gangsters because they have understood that Facebook has been essentially stealing, in other words, as I've described, illegitimately taking our private human experience for its production processes that create these prediction products, which is what they sell and how they make money. The key thing that I want our viewers to know is that surveillance capitalism doesn't stop at Facebook. And right now, it's a hugely positive development that we are looking at Facebook with this kind of scrutiny and perhaps moving to finally regulate this corporation. But that is the beginning, not the end of our challenge. Surveillance capitalism is an economic logic that includes but moves far beyond Facebook at this point in time. And so we are going to need the social response that addresses, interrupts, and outlaws this new economic logic, not just a single company or not just a couple of companies.
You write, a global architecture of behavior modification threatens human nature in the 21st century. Explain.
All right. Well, once you understand that surveillance capitalism is an economic logic, it is not the same as technology. This is one of the big lies that has been perpetrated, that these methodologies are the only way that digital technology can work, that there's an inevitabilist propaganda that has been fed to us. So we need to pull these issues apart. We have digital technology, which we believed would be emancipatory, empowering, democratizing, and it still can be. In the last 20 years, it has been overtaken, hijacked by an economic logic whose economic imperatives put it on a collision course with democracy, both from below and from above. One of the things that surveillance capitalists learned is that the most powerful predictions of human behavior come from actually intervening in our behavior, touching our behavior, to nudge, to influence, to tune, to herd our behavior toward its commercial outcomes. And what this has done is made them take hold of the digital milieu, all of the devices, beginning with our phones and our laptops, but the sensors, the facial recognition, the smart dishwasher, the smart television set, the smart car, the smart city.
Look, here comes another one, just like the other one.
Swerve them.
Dodge them.
Quick them.
Push them over.
Tell them lies.
Here's where robots' rules of order don't apply. At Hideo Nuts, Bolt-a-Drone.
As seen on Who Asked For It. Strap on the servo mitts and pit your metal against common household appliances.
Step right up.
Let's go.
Think you could go three rounds with this water heater sailor? Looks easy, but sealed to the back of this metal mother is a radar-activated stamping and seizing module that'll keep a man punching until he's drunk with power. A man like you.
All up inside for Hideo Nuts Bolt-a-Drone.
Come on, Barney.
And a further reclamation.
Come on, Barney.
Thank you.
We can take on a couple of toasters or something.
Look, kid, I dreamt I went there once, but fighting's out of style. Now.
All of this digital infrastructure now has been taken by surveillance capitalism as a way to nudge and tune and herd our behavior toward its guaranteed outcomes. It does this with subliminal cues. It's a highly scientific process. It does this in ways that it brags about are always outside of our awareness so that we have no right of combat, we cannot resist, we cannot say no, and we cannot exit. So this is what I call a global means of behavioral modification, where essentially this great digital architecture that we've built in order to be an emancipatory and life-giving process for us and help us in our lives has now become commandeered by surveillance capitalism as a means to modify our behavior toward its commercial ends, which is a direct assault on human autonomy, a direct assault on our decision rights, a direct assault on the whole notion of individual sovereignty. Back in the 1970s, there was a Senate committee that included people like Edward Kennedy and Sam Ervin. These folks met for many months, and they decided that behavioral modification was a pernicious action, that it was a complete defiance of democratic principles. And they decided that no federal money would fund any kind of program based on behavioral modification in prisons, in schools, in hospitals. Today, in the year 2019, we've just spent the last two decades where, as democracy slept, the private sector, under the aegis of surveillance capitalism, has been able to command the digital to create a literally ubiquitous means of behavioral modification, without anybody saying no, and without most of us even noticing or understanding what has occurred.
You talk about herding, so let's go to herds, elephants, where you say that tech platforms like Facebook and Google are elephant poachers and our personal data is ivory tusks.
Well, we've been fed a lot of lies, a lot of euphemism, a lot of misdirection. Those are some of the strategies that have allowed surveillance capitalism to succeed. One of them is the notion that, you know, if it's free, you're the product, right? Everybody has heard that cliche. I confront that head on. Once you understand that we are in the regime of an economic logic, not of technology itself, it's like going backwards. And like we're in Wonderland. Now we go backwards through the looking glass and we come out in a place called reality where we can start to see clearly. And when we start to see clearly, what we see is, first of all, these services are not free. We think the services are free, but they think that we're free. We're their free raw material. We think that we're the product. But they understand that we are not the product. We are simply the free source of raw material, like those elephant tusks. Everything about us, like what our problems are, what our real needs are, what our real concerns are, everything about us is ignored. They have no interest in us. It doesn't matter if we are happy or sad. It doesn't matter if we're doing well or poorly. It only matters that we do these things in ways that they can scrape the experience and turn it into data.
There's a man who leads a life of danger. To everyone he meets, he stays a stranger. With every move he makes, another chance he takes. Odds are he won't live to see tomorrow. Secret agent man, secret agent man. They've given you a number and taken away your name.
Where am I?
In the village.
What do you want?
Information.
Whose side are you on?
That would be telling. We want information. Information. Information.
You won't get it.
By hook or by crook, we will.
Who are you?
The new number two.
Who is number one?
You are number six.
I am not a number. I am a free man.
There are a few other interesting lies here. We think we're searching Google. Google's actually searching us. We think that these companies have privacy policies. Those policies are actually surveillance policies. We're told that if we have nothing to hide, then we have nothing to fear. The fact is, what they don't tell us and what we are forgetting, that if you have nothing to hide, then you are nothing. Because everything about us that makes us our unique identities, that gives us our individual spirit, our personality, our sense of freedom of will, freedom of action, our sense of our right to our own futures, that's what comes from within. Those are our inner resources. That's our private realm. And it's intended to be private for a reason, because that is how it grows and flourishes and turns us into people who assert moral autonomy, an essential element of a flourishing democratic society.
Hello, Doctor. How are you?
The doctor is on.
Good, Doctor. Nice to see you operating.
Ha ha, that's very logical.
All right. right, Doc, this is it. Gird your grit for a big one. Why does the porridge bird lay his egg in the air?
No.
Why does perished birds leaves its hex in the air?
No.
Why is doven perished barn's lazy leg in the ire?
No.
Why is ass the poor rich barn hong
delay
laser's edge in the fair?
No.
The doctor is unhappy.
Unhappy.
Is the doctor turned off?
No.
Well, if you're turned on, aren't you happy?
No.
Are you a machine that only answers no?
No.
Then you can answer a question yes.
Yes.
Can't you answer my question yes or no?
Yes.
Please choose, Doctor.
No shoes, Doctor.
No.
Ah, but you just did choose, Doctor.
No.
Doctor. You're lying.
Yes.
Excuse me, don't excuse me. Clem, you're making, not making the doctor unhappy, happy.
I'm not making the doctor anything. You're on, aren't you?
Yes.
Do you remember the past, Doctor?
Gypsy Doctor.
Do you remember the future?
Yes.
Forget it, Tim.
Don't forget it.
Fireworks are over. Only the smoke remains, clouding my great crystal balls. Is there anything you didn't understand about your future, Mr. Barney, Mr. Barney. Yes.
Barney, well, now I won't say that I understand everything, but it was certainly different and... Oh, yes, well worth a dollar.
Yeah. Thank you very much. Make sure that you remember it.
Oh, yeah, well, how could I forget that, you know?
Doctor, yes.
Yes. Well, so long.
Oh, as you get off the wagon, please, will you tell your friend, that little sailor, to step up?
Oh, certainly. I think I can do
Thank
that.
You.
Hey, Clem.
What?
Hey, the little sailor's the last guy.
Oh.
And he's weird with a beard, man. Listen, I'm going to hitch up the horses. We'll be ready to go.
No, leave the horses in the wagon.
Yeah, it's all downhill from here.
Oh, look out, here he is.
Ah, the balls are clearing again. The right one is the sun, and the left one is the moon. Put what you want between them, and your future begins. Aha. I see you are a sailor.